Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Gareth King. How are you, Gareth?
Oh, I'm well, thank you, Chris.
Excellent, excellent. You're the viticulturalist here at Felton Roads in Bannockburn.
Bannockburn, that's not the Bannockburn, Scotland, though, Chris. We're here in New Zealand.
Exactly, just outside of Cromwell, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. About 8 kilometres, just to the sort of due south of the township of Cromwell in central Otago.
Yeah, I always think of Bannockburn as probably one of the better areas in central Otago. Central Otago's got lots of little sub-areas like Gibson Valley and Tarras these days and Alexandra.
Yeah, no, they have. And I think there's about 5 sub-regions as they all look. So, you're Alexandra, Bannockburn, Gibston, what's known as the sort of the Lowburn Pisa area up along the road towards Wanaka. Bendigo, of course, another very famous area. And then through to the Wanaka sort of sub-appellation as well.
Yeah, there's not many up in Wanaka. Is Ripon still the only
one? Yeah, Ripon's still there. Maud Wines and Maud a couple of other smaller little producers starting to come on. They're looking good.
Yeah, there's a lot of new wineries setting up around.
Yeah, there was. Obviously, for a region, we're still pretty young. We're only 30-odd years into it. And, even ourselves here at Felton Road, 2016 will be our 20th vintage.
Yes, that's not many, is it?
So we're just young, just babies.
What I want to talk about today, though, is not about Central Otago. I've done interviews on Central Otago in the past. I'm more interested in the viticulturist because, being a viticulturist here, that's fabulous. And I'm quite interested in talking about how things have changed over the years since maybe the first plantings, etc., right through to now. We had a wee wander around the vineyard earlier, and you were showing me the original or some of the original plantings with their nice fat trunks and some of the newer plantings with the thinner trunks. But the way they've been spaced and heights and all that sort of thing seems to have changed a little bit.
Yeah, I suppose, Chris, as we had a brief look through the vineyard this morning in that discussion, that in years gone by, and it's only been probably, 1992, so we're a little over sort of 24 years that the vines have been in the ground here, there's been a greater understanding, I suppose, of what the soils and the climate will suit us. Those original developments looking at 2,700 vines a hectare, should we be at 2.5-metre row spacing and canopy heights at, sort of 1 metre for the fruiting wire. And it was all probably quite historically based on, some of the original New Zealand research that was done. And of course, most of that was done, by Dr. Richard Smart a number of years ago through the Tikawata Research Centre, and that was all packed up, and then that's probably then led to why, did it happen here in Central Otago at that sort of a spacing, and yes, things like machinery and what people can get up and down the vine row to where we've got today. I think, as we described, we've got an understanding now that I think at 2 metres row spacing, probably a metre vine spacing, canopy height, still no higher than 2 metres, but probably dropping the fruiting wire down to about 800, so that we're maximising a little bit more of that heat reflectiveness that we're seeing coming off the soil, but at the same time not compromising the possibility of frost. So there's lots of factors there, Chris.
Yeah, let's unpick some of them, because it's quite interesting, because most people, most of the interviews we do are winemakers and owners, and viticulturists are quite interesting people, and I think they don't get the chance to have a chat sometimes. So let's talk about heat reflective first. Soils, there's a lot of schist. I remember just loads of schist, which is it's a sedimentary rock.
Yep, definitely. And, obviously, many millions of years back when it was obviously pushed up, and of course that's what developed that main divide that everyone knows as the South Island of New Zealand, and as the Southern Alps, and, with those pockets and the draining of some of the, the estuaries and the lakes as such that were here in those early days, that they are sedimentary based. The glaciers did come into Central Otago, but they're further north from where we are here. We're very much in the sedimentary lake bed. But with that schist, the reflective nature, the mica that comes out of that, You know, when you're out there in the vineyard, if you're not wearing a pair of sunglasses, after an hour or so, you will feel the pressure on the brain. The headaches start to come in with that very reflective nature.
Do you find you get it's like when you ski, you know, if you're skiing, you're not used to it, you're, under your chin can sometimes get sunburnt because you're not used to the sun reflecting off it.
Yeah, it's that is right. The one that catches people, though, is under the nose.
Under the nose.
Yeah, and that's where if you get the slightly cloudier days with the odd break in the cloud, they're by far a greater volume of UV reflectiveness that we can see coming through. It's the UV here that is very, very high in central. You know, without having any cloud cover, very pure, clear skies, both morning, night, and of course throughout the day. But that UV nature and leading to the possibility of reflecting off that schist, that mica that we're seeing, is the one that I think brings that colour and that intensity. We have to be careful, though. I think that we don't try and overdo it, and that's why, you know, I said to you that, you know, we've got to be careful that with the nature of the canopy, it's great that we can tighten it up to 2 meters. We're actually almost by doing that stopping some of that very reflective nature, because you're creating more shading on the soil.
Yeah.
And what we're really looking for is if we can create that shading across the earth itself, then we're keeping the soil cooler.
Yep.
If we can keep that soil cooler, the vine and all those roots that are up in the upper part of the profile of the soil are much happier. You've got more microbes. They're not getting burnt off and having to go deep. Okay, less water is required. You've got more. This is crazy. You've got more vines per hectare, but we actually apply less water on our closely planted blocks than our higher densities, and that's because the UV and the intensity of the sun isn't drying out the soil.
Yeah, you get less evaporation.
Correct.
Okay, so there's a compromise between vine height, isn't there? What are the two main things you're compromising usually?
Yeah, I think the comment that everyone was so concerned in the early days was frost risk, and it is still one of our probably biggest risks here.
So the closer you get to the ground...
The closer you get to the ground, the colder it is. And perhaps in those early days, technology to control frost was going to be mainly water to do that, and that's a resource we don't have enough of here in Bannockburn, and we've got to be very careful.
Good, dirty great river just down
there. There is a great big dirty river that's down there, but it means building dams, so it means taking away, you know, good quality soil to build bigger dams, and you need a lot of water. Yeah. And we have one of our vineyards that does, we do that for at Cornish Point. We have overhead water to control it, but the soils there have less high clay content compared to here at the Elms Vineyard. And it's the silts there and the lovely draining gravels below that allow us to be able to put water on there and not have any effects because of that.
Yep.
So the frost risk meant that let's keep the canopy up to a metre, perhaps even 1.1 for the fruiting wire height.
Yep.
Because for every 100 mils that you come off the ground, you will see a 0.1 of a degree increase. So in a nutshell, 1 meter up, 1 degree higher. So if you're touching zero at the ground frost, you'll be 1 degree at 1 meter. As a rough rule of thumb, what we don't take into consideration is that is a calibatic style frost event where you get, you know, snow coming in later in the afternoon, almost early evening up on the hills behind us, and then that cold air mass draining down over the vineyard sites.
Yeah.
And unfortunately that's just a cold air mass moving across, and nothing really apart from full fixed set water will really control frost at that stage.
Okay. So closer you get, increased frost risk, but the higher you get, the compromise is what, inter-row shading, is it?
Bit of inter-row shading, but then you're losing that reflective nature. And of course, you then have to have very tall canopies. And, you know, we're not finding everyone to work in the vineyard that's above 6 foot tall. So, you know, lifting wires, controlling the canopy up to that sort of, 2.2 meters off the ground, becomes an issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're having to get into specialist machinery or over-the-row machinery, which is heavy and expensive. And if you really want to farm the thing as we are organically and biodynamically, we're trying to do everything we can by hand, but we are still needing the odd machine.
Yeah, okay. So you've dropped the height of the vines, so you're not as worried about the frost, and then you've dropped the height of the vine height of the canopy.
Yeah, the canopy height. So the canopy height is obviously, you know, it's in the same proportion. So if we're looking at, you know, a canopy historically would be, say, 2.4 metres almost off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're seeing that down to, you know, no more than 2.2, because we're coming down into that sort of 800 with a 1,200 canopy above that.
Okay. And the other thing you've done is you've increased decreased the vine spacings. Does that mean you can get more grapes off the vineyard?
Well, in theory, yes. it does mean that there's a greater opportunity to have every vine carry a solid load. That's not really been our objective. What we're really looking for is to make sure that each vine gets to work less hard, if that's such a word in the English vocabulary. We're just looking at, it's not making it easier for them, but hopefully with more vines per hectare, we're getting a greater opportunity to actually reflect what's here. There's one thing that grapes are very, very good at doing, and that's expressing where they're from. And rather than just having, you know, 2,700 vines do that, we're now out to 5,000 vines per hectare. So we're looking at only just over a kilo per vine.
That's a bottle, basically, isn't it?
It's basically a bottle, yeah. You know, you're looking at 32, 35 hectolitres, something along that sort of a scenario, you know, per hectare coming through into the winery. To do that, we've got to be quite smart and think a lot with the closely planted about our shoot spacing, our winter pruning. You know, you've got at least 60 to 80% more vines per hectare, so you're having to address every vine, so your costs of production are certainly higher for that reason. But we believe that we're seeing a greater effect of the expression of terroir, the expression of sight that's here, that, you know, people working in the vineyard, you know, we're needing smarter, you know, more volume of staff throughout the 12 months as well.
Have you seen a difference in the quality of the fruit as you've changed the vine spacings and the densities? Is it, you said terroir in the wines, but do you see that in the fruit? Are they riper, less ripe? What's going on?
I think it's, yeah, the answer is yes. I think you see the vineyard, you know, grow up a lot quicker. Instead of waiting perhaps out to that 10, 15 year point to start to hit that sweet spot for vine age, I think with the closely planted blocks, because they're not having to be cropped as heavy, I think we're seeing that coming out significantly earlier. I wouldn't want to give you a date, because every site, you know, with the different soils and we see it differently. But we have seen on some of our newer planting blocks that and I think Mike will take you through this shortly when you taste some wines, that even vine age, it's the tannin structure, but even with closely planted vineyards really early on, they are quite growing up and expressing that wonderful sort of softness of tannins that can come through without being aggressive.
Yeah, okay, so the vines are more physiologically ripe a bit earlier.
Yeah, the fruit is, I think it's balance, you know. It's also hopefully enabling the, you know, that expression to be there without having to have the vines controlled or manipulated. You know, plant the vines, let them do the work, and then, you know, sit back and hopefully the fruit that's coming in is of the highest quality that we can.
I noticed looking down the rows, or not so much looking down each row, but you compare one row to the next, your vines seem to zigzag across the thing. Each row straight, but then they zigzag across. Normally people plant their vines north-south, so that you get a bit of morning sun, a bit of afternoon sun. Why are your stuff, it appears not to be running north-south, or at least some of them aren't.
Some of them aren't. No, they. You're right. They're running at about 15 degrees, you know, west of true north.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest reasoning behind that here is obviously the heat and when we can get the temperatures in the hottest part of the day. Obviously, it's morning time here at the moment, so it's not the hottest stage.
No, it's nice.
But when we move into that, you know, from midday, 1 o'clock, you know, the temperatures here can be quite easily into the 30s, and that's mm-hmm. rising from, you know, 31st of December here, where we had a light frost. So there can be quite a significant diurnal shift.
That's day-night.
That diurnal shift means that, you know, from mid-afternoon, the hottest part of the day here can be 5, 6 o'clock at night. It's not midday.
Mm.
And what that ends up meaning that if our row orientation is more angling north-south, or even if it was even slightly towards the east, then the downside is that the individual bunches, even with a bit of canopy cover, the vines are sitting very, very hot for quite a long period of time. So that's why we crank them round to being, you know, west of north, so that that hottest part of the day, they're only spending the sort of a shorter amount of time in that very extreme heat.
So the normally the vine canopy is shading or can shade the grapes if you're in a hotter area. So you've got the vines slightly facing around, so you're getting slightly less heat around 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock.
Yeah, hopefully that reflectiveness is coming back over. Of course, the key thing here is that it's that UV intensity from the sun, and that when it's at its highest point in the sky, of course, you know, throughout the January period. And it's that intensity coming down onto the leaves on that side, Chris. If they get too hot, the vine function shuts down. Excuse me. And it's that shutting down of that vine function that, you know, you're losing the opportunity to have metabolization of things like acids out of the wines. And of course, being that diurnal shift in those cool climates, then we do have higher acidity that we're starting with. We don't want to open the leaves up to try and help with that metabolization of too much of the acids, because you'll then get the effect of, you know, almost sunburn and intense heat coming onto the fruit as well.
You were saying earlier you used to look after a vineyard for some other people, and you used to trim it a wee bit strangely.
Yeah, it's so part of our initial development that we did with the Calvert family, and who are based for the United Nations, sort of pretty much all over the world doing food relief and things, that one of their initial vineyards that they had on their site was angled a little bit more towards the east. And quite quickly we could see that, you know, we were seeing the fruit there getting a lot more heat onto it. You know,
were you getting a bit of sunburn on there?
Seeing the odd little bit of sunburn, but more just knowing that the skins were getting very, very tough.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was obviously a lot more exposure to that.
If you get sunburn, it just gives a bitterness to the wine, doesn't it?
Does give a bitterness. And obviously it immediately stops, you know, where that skin's at that stage. So if it's high in, you know, acid and tannin and bitterness, then that's going to reflect through, you know. And same with the stems and the stalk that, you know, potentially coming through with the winemaking style as well. So what we needed to think of there was doing something that's a little bit unusual, and that's actually trimming early to actually force the – and trimming, what I'm meaning by that is cutting the tops of the extension.
So the vine shoots up, you're whipping the shops off.
Yeah, so cutting it off just over a meter of its initial growth. And as soon as you terminate that top point, you'll throw laterals.
Yeah.
Okay,
so that's now, the vine trying to grow outwards.
It's trying to grow out, and that's all. That's quite a no-no, you know, historically in farming of grapes, because you know you'll increase the density of your canopy, you'll get more shading, you get all these negative things that come about. But for us on that particular site, it's been wonderful to do that technique, because it's actually meant then we've been able to give that individual clusters and those individual vines much more protection. Mm-hmm. Down there. The nice part is that we've gone ahead and developed another 10-odd hectares on that site now, which we now have for ourselves under the Calvert Vineyard and a new vineyard developed called Mac Muir. And that's a family name of Nigel Greening, family history.
Yep.
So the little orientation that we've been able to think of there is that it's meant that we don't now have to trim that as early, and we've been able to, you know, maintain enough leaf cover throughout the season.
You see in Australia that Australia gets quite hot, or can get quite hot, and they often have a lot of leaf cover shading the grapes to stop that sunburn and the bitterness in the wines. Is that the same sort of idea going on there?
Yeah, I think it's very much that same idea, and focusing it. There's one thing that I think I'm a very firm believer of, that you have to have a healthy vine, and a healthy vine has to be, you know, growing quite healthily. Healthily, is that a word? Probably not. It has to be quite healthy. You know, I think, and that means it has to have green leaf and function Chris. I think, you know, there's a misnomer out there that, you know, if vines just struggle to get to the top of their canopy and they're only just hanging in there, that they're going to make the very best wine. That may be the case elsewhere in the world with different climates, but for us here with the heat and the exposure, like you're saying, even in Australia, I don't think that's the case. I think if we wanted to express, you know, good Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Riesling from our sites here in Bannockburn, then I think we really need to have a, you know, vines that are in a healthy and soils that are still actively, you know, receiving moisture and aren't getting too hot on a daily basis.
Excellent. All right, Gareth, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Chris.
Cheers.